A sin unto death? That's a good answer, too. What? Pride. Look at you. Gold star. So according to Lewis, and we'll have to see if we think he's right or not, he says the great sin is pride. And the argument kind of starts with a positive. Think about what the most important things in the Bible are. Is there a greatest commandment? Yeah. Love God above all else. So the greatest sin would be whatever gets in the way of that. What keeps you from putting God where he belongs? Probably putting me there, right? So the logic is that because it gets in the way of the most important thing, it must be the worst thing. And because it leads to so many other things, how many sins are the result of pride? And how many sins never get repented of because of pride? Right? So if you were going to make an argument, I wouldn't, you know, risk my soul on this point or anything, but just if for curiosity's sake, if you were trying to rank them, pride would be pretty high on the list, I think, just because of how significant it is to everything we're trying to do as a Christian. So a couple observations. First off, he says, pride is the Christian moral that differs most from the typical human condition. In the sense that what a Christian says about pride. So really that sentence would be better. Humility is the most different from the typical human condition. The idea that you're not supposed to be proud. Right? A lot of the other things Christians do, people that aren't Christians eventually kind of do it by accident. I mean, some people get married and stay married, Christian or not. Some people work hard and don't steal, Christian or not. I mean, there are a few things that people just kind of get right almost by accident, right? Rule of large numbers, we're going to get one right eventually. Pride is not one of those. It is very difficult to be accidentally humble. It's not natural for the current state of a human being. It's something that you just have to intentionally do. I don't know if anybody becomes naturally humble. Something has to shape you that way. Hardly anyone will even admit this flaw in themselves. So if we went around the room and I said, tell me about a sin you've repented of, that wouldn't be fun, I won't do it, but there are a lot of things you'd admit to. I mean, I've had people tell me I used to have a drinking problem, I used to have a drug problem, I used to run around and do this with women or men or whatever. I've had people admit to a lot of things. I'm a preacher, people talk to me, eventually people admit to things. I've never had anybody just come up to me and say, you know, I have a real problem with pride, right? I mean, it's not something that you want to fess up to. It's not something that you put on your list. It's sneakier than that. No one wants to admit they have it. On the other hand, it's the one that bothers us the most when we see it in somebody else. You will never tell me you're proud, but if I said, name some people you know that are proud and haughty, oh, I've met some people, let me tell you, right? Like they stick out like a sore thumb when you see it, and we just can't stand it. That guy thinks too much of himself. I mean, it just goes without saying, if a, think of public office for a minute. If somebody's running for public office, and they might have a lot of defects, if they just sell themselves as proud and egotistical, that's hard to overcome, right? That you're at least supposed to pretend you're humble, right? That's something that people just recognize. That's something you're supposed to do because people don't like a proud person when we see it. It irritates us. The easiest way to lose favor as a professional athlete is to be, you know, the showboat, the proud person. Immediately people say, oh, I didn't really like that. I used to like that guy, but now. In fact, the more we have, the more we resent it in other people. It's one of those sins, you dislike it about yourself, but you hate it in others. Right? The more proud you are, the more irritated you become when you meet somebody who's proud. Because they're really horning in on what's important, which is me. So as a vice, as a sin, Lewis makes an argument. He says there's a pretty good case to say that this is the one that is the root of the problem. Let's take a little tour through some biblical passages. We'll start in the Old Testament and then move ahead. Psalm 10, 1 through 4. Somebody want to read for us Psalm number 10, 1 through 4. So this psalm is about David or somebody like David writing a psalm saying, God, you need to come down here and check on things because things are really bad down here. And what's the worst thing he can name going on the earth? And we got all these proud people. And then how does he define pride in verse 4? The proud says what? There is no God, right? That pride puts myself in first place. If somebody else is in first place, I can't be first. So reason number one to demote God or get rid of him altogether is because you'd like to be there. Okay? And this is interesting because in the ancient world, there were no atheists. I mean, there's like today, you have people that say, I don't believe in God for intellectual reasons. That just doesn't, there's no reason to think people thought that way in the ancient world. This is a person who might believe in 50 gods, but none of them were going to be in first place. There is no God most high. I reserve that spot for me, and I'm going to live my life like it. And so it's a moral indictment. Isaiah 13, verse 11. Isaiah 13 and verse 11. Donnell, thank you, sir.
And I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the church.
Okay, I'm going to punish the whole world for its evil. Any evil in particular have in mind? Pride, arrogancy, right? I'm going to start right there. And that's step one. And there might be a lot of things that come as step two, but step one, proud. God's coming to get you. Pop quiz before we go to Ezekiel, because I don't want you to cheat and read it yet. And maybe this is an easy one, because you know what the lesson topic is. Why? What was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah? Yeah. If you had to guess, like if we want, okay, pretend we're not doing a lesson on pride for a minute. What would you normally think of if I say the sin of Sodom is fornication, sexual immorality, homosexuality, something like that, right? If you stretch it a ways, you might even say a lack of hospitality. They were, you know, they were raping the angels or trying to or whatever. Anyways, you could stretch that story a little ways and get something out of it. Okay, now Ezekiel 16:49-50. This was funny because I was actually in a discussion with a preacher friend today who was. He was having this out. He said, you know, what is the sin Sodom was guilty of? I said, well, for what it's worth, Ezekiel thinks it's this. Ezekiel 16:49-50. Somebody wants to read that for us? So it does get eventually to things that he calls abominations, and that's probably the stuff we remember. But in this verse, it says, you know, that was a consequence, that was a symptom. What was the sin, the root of the problem? Pride. And even with that, I mean, isn't that interesting? We think immediately of homosexuality. He says pride, and they had way too much money. And then the other stuff came out of that. I don't like that, right? I like to think of Sodom doing things I'm not guilty of. But what if the city God destroyed started out with things that are a little closer to home? I don't like that very much. So that's an interesting take from Ezekiel, warning about Sodom. And finally, Amos chapter 6 and verse 8. Does anyone have that for us? Amos chapter 6 and verse 8. If you make a list of things the Lord hates in the Old Testament, pride is usually top of the list. There aren't a lot of phrases in the Old Testament where it says God hates fill in the blank. But when it does, pride is usually the list, and things fall from that. I abhor your pride. And in this case, it was fortresses, right? You think you've got a well-defended city, so you don't have to believe in me anymore. I'll show you. I abhor your pride. So if this is the worst thing, we would expect the opposite of that to be the best thing. So how about a couple of verses on humility? 2 Samuel chapter 22 and verse 28. Who'd like to read for us? 2 Samuel 22, 28. Yeah, so again, with the haughty, I'm going to destroy the haughty. But who will I save? The humble, the lowly, the afflicted person, the person that's already at the bottom, that's the person I'll save. So in the moral sense, there's two locations. There's proud and there's humble. Proud always destroyed, humble always saved. That equation works all the way through the Old Testament. And however, whatever story it's in, humble good, proud bad, is always the way it works out. Proverbs 29:23. Anyone have this one? A man's pride will bring him low. Honor for the humble in spirit. Okay. Is that the person who seems like he gets honored? It often seems like it's the arrogant person who gets all the honor, but God says that's not the way I do it. Okay, finally, how about the New Testament? Matthew 18 and verse 4. Todd, thank you, sir. If anything, Jesus is more emphatic, right? What do you mean by humble? I mean this child. And what do you mean about humility is good? How about greatest? So humility makes you greatest in the kingdom of heaven. One more, James chapter 4, verse 6. Put the cherry on top here. Right? Grace, this unmerited favor. And yet even that, he says, it's unmerited favor for somebody. That there is no unmerited favor for the person who thinks he already merits it. Right? The proud, I don't have grace for them. But for the humble, I have grace for the humble. Okay. So you see in those passages, and we could just keep on reading, right? I mean, what does the Lord require of thee? Walk humbly with your God. I mean, on and on. How many passages talk about humility on the one side and pride in the other? It's pretty straightforward to make a case that that's the central theme of a lot of the Bible, if not all of it, but a lot of it. What are some of the products of pride? We're going to talk about three of them briefly. Pride leads to aggressive competitiveness. Why is that? Well, every person's pride is in competition with everybody else's. If I want to be first, I can't let you be. Right? The real reason we resent other people getting attention is that we want it. So, I'm not going to say all competition is evil, but we know it when we see it, right? That the person who can't be happy about the success of other people, because that should have been me. Right? That kind of competitiveness is very dangerous. Why would parents get in a fight at a T-ball game? Is there great financial stakes there? Pro contracts waiting in the ring for, you know, the best T-ball player? Great civic disputes being settled? We're going to elect the president based on the outcome of this T-ball game. Why do we get mad about the outcome of a T-ball game? Why are we going to go yell at the referee about a T-ball game? You're not even playing. But that's my kid. That's a little bit of me. And my kid's going to be first. So that hyper-competitiveness, you see it there, you see it in the workplace, you see it in churches, right? That's a symptom of pride, okay? What about greed? Why do we want money? That sounds like a silly question. And elsewhere, I mean, we can make a pretty good argument here. Does the Bible sometimes say money is a problem or the desire for money? The love of money is the root of all evil. I mean, that sounds pretty bad. Why do we want money? To buy ice cream, obviously, right? Okay, what's the besides ice cream, and I'm going to grant you that one. Besides ice cream, what's the reason we want money? Does anybody, let me ask this, does it have any aesthetic value? Does anybody like wallpaper their house with money because they just like to see it? Does anybody like lay it out in their bedroom to walk on because it's just comfortable? Yeah, it's because of things I can get with it and the status that gives me. I don't actually want the money. The dollar bill, I mean, you think about that a second. Do I have a dollar? I do. I have exactly $1. How about that? What is the value of that? I mean, is that not the most insignificant, sad, pathetic little thing you've ever seen? When you really think about what it is, a wadded up piece of paper with George Washington on it, right? It used to be worth a lot more, yeah. But isn't that, I mean, to think the things we do for that, when you look at it like that, it's meaningless. Why do we care about it? Because what it can get for us and what I can have with it and what that does for my sense of how important I am, right? That's where it has value. Otherwise, it's useless. They say in the days of the early 30s when, so this is post-World War I, pre-World War II, Germany is in, you think the Great Depression was bad here, the German Great Depression was just cataclysmic. And people literally taking the German marks to the store in wheelbarrows, right? Wheelbarrow full of marks might get you some groceries. The dollar, their dollar was useless. When you put it in that context, I mean, what value is it? Only in what it gets you. And what it gets me makes me feel good. Pride doesn't just want something, it wants more of it. Pride wants to have the most of it and the best of it. It leads to greed because it is never satisfied. Have you ever had it so good that you knew you were the most important person in the world? I haven't got there yet, right? There's always somebody that's got somebody more, something else that I need. So I'm never, my pride is never satisfied. And so my greed is never satisfied. It drives us to seek things not out of need or even want, but to feel superior. We'll buy things we don't even want because I'm supposed to have that. A person like me would have something like that. It can come in any size, even a preacher's library. Boxing up the books today, I kept finding books that I had not read, and I thought, why did I buy that book? Well, preachers like me are supposed to have, you know, that book, obviously, right? Don't, Celine can't even listen to that. I don't even want to hear. But anyway, we all got something that we get because I don't even expect to read it, but I bought it because, you know, yeah, that's the kind of book I'd have. A guy like me would have that. And we all have stuff like that. And then pride also leads to what Lewis called enmity. That's an older English word. But hatred, strife, division, put your word in there. Other vices can sometimes bring people together. You know, once in a while, people will get together and sin together and get along in their sin, right? It happens once in a while. Pride never does that. Nobody cooperates because they're all so proud. Nobody likes each other because, well, you're just as proud as I am. I enjoy being in your company so much, right? That's just not the way it works. A lot of other things, you find somebody who sins like you do and you might want to hang around with them. Pride doesn't work that way. It not only creates enmity with people, but with God. And that's the chief problem. Back to that passage in Psalm 10. If you want to be first, God is always going to be first. You can't even like God, let alone love God, if your fundamental personal desire is to be the most important thing in the universe, because he'll always be more so. So all you can ever have is malice towards God. There's no room for him in a world where you want to be the most important thing. Proud people can't worship or fellowship with a God like that. It's not possible. Worship comes from the English word worthy, worth-ship. It's a way of saying you are worthy of my adoration because you're greater than me. Pride can't admit anybody's greater than me. So I can't offer anybody worship, certainly not God. So Lewis would say it like this. I'm sorry, go ahead, Todd. So blasphemy in the Bible means, the simple definition is to speak evil of, okay? Blasphemy in English, for whatever reason, if I speak evil of Donnell, I just say, I spoke evil of him. But if I speak evil of God, we say, blasphemy, right? It's the same thing, it's just different person. So blasphemy is when my pride leads me to actually speak evil of God, to speak in a way that lowers God. And so there's different ways of doing that. The passage that comes to mind probably is when they're having the debate about the miracle, and they say, well, he did that by the power of Satan. What could be worse? What could be more demeaning to something God did than to say, well, Beelzebub, the Lord of cow dung, did that, right? I'm going to demote what you did and make it less. Because if Jesus did things by the power of God, he's a prophet and I need to listen to him. That's all right. He did it by the power of Beelzebub. And Jesus said, whoa. You not only demoted me, you might be forgiven for that. You demoted God. And that's where he starts on that speech about blasphemy of the Holy Spirit, right? If you cannot attribute to him his place, if you're going to say the Holy Spirit and what he does is to me as if it were the Lord of cow dung, Satan himself, how do you come back from that? Right? You're not saying God is second place. You're saying he's dung. Or how do you come back from that? You might mistake Jesus. Right? He's in flesh. He's standing in front of you. Yeah. A lot of people mistook him. Right? He says that you could be forgiven that because he didn't look very godlike at that moment. But to see the Spirit work in power, heal the sick and raise the dead, say, well, that was Satan. There is something so wrong with your heart. How do you come back from that? So when he says that's unforgivable, I don't know for sure. I wouldn't want to try it to find out. I don't know if he's saying God won't forgive you because it's that bad. That doesn't sound like something God usually says. Or it could be that a heart gone that far that could see the most beautiful thing God did and say, that's the most despicable thing I've ever seen. That heart can't be recovered without just breaking its free will and doing away with it, right? That person is calloused. So one of those two interpretations, or a third I don't know yet, is kind of what that is about. Yeah. So pride even factors into that. Why would you look at something God did and say, well, that looks like the devil to me? Only reason is to make something lower. I don't like the idea of Jesus doing miracles by God's power. So in order to demote Jesus, I'll demote God himself in the process. Yeah, maybe. That's my roundabout answer. So, to that point, Lewis says, the real test of being in the presence of God is that you either forget about yourself altogether or see yourself as a small, dirty object. And it is better to forget about yourself altogether. Right, that when you sit next to God, if you're really there and see God for who he is, you can't help but be smaller. In fact, and Lewis's point is, you'll never get small enough when you really think about it. So it's better to just kind of forget about yourself altogether and focus on God. Because even if you started saying how detestable I am, you can even become proud and tell him what a fine sinner you are. I mean, really, that's terrible, but it happens, right? Oh, no, you think you were bad. Let me tell you stuff I did. I mean, even that, you'll never get low enough to get rid of pride. Lewis says, better would be just to forget about yourself altogether and just focus on God. Because as long as you're thinking about you, there's something that should have been about God that's not. So just forget about yourself. You can't know God and still think you're very important in the way He is. The most important thing about you is that you're important to Him. And again, that's back to how great He is. Some misconceptions to avoid. We'll see if we agree with these. I think they're pretty good. He says, pleasure at being praised is not pride. He says, that doesn't mean it couldn't lead to pride. Does it feel good when somebody says, hey, you did good? I kind of think it's supposed to. I mean, that's God promises to say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Right? He doesn't want you to cringe and say, oh, don't say that about me, I'm rotten. I mean, you're supposed to say, that's what I want to hear. Right? That's good. I want to hear that. That's a reward to me. It's supposed to be good. So having somebody say, I'm preaching through, you know, I've been preaching through 2 Timothy. Paul says some nice things about Timothy. Why? It's supposed to feel good to have somebody you respect say good job. So that's not the same thing as pride, to have someone say something about you and to enjoy that, to say, thank you. Okay. Genuine admiration that is earned is not pride. Okay. Can it lead to pride? Yep. But to have someone admire you, admirable people are admirable. That's the whole point, right? You find a good person, a decent human being, you say, that's a good guy. I want to be more like that person. Okay. Third, God doesn't want to rid us of pride for His sake, but ours. I sat through the strangest lecture once upon a time where the professor was deeply concerned about whether God had a pride problem or not. You know, God wants all this glory. He says, is it strange to you that God always wants this glory, and He wants this glory and doesn't want you to have any? And I said, you know, in Texas they say it ain't bragging if it's true, right? God is that great, and it's rightfully His. I don't think God wants you to be humble because it makes Him feel better. I think He wants you to be humble because when you're proud, you're worse. It's for your own good. When you have a flawed view of yourself and think you're more than you are, you're not what you're supposed to be. It's a poison. So when He says be humble, it's not because He's so egotistical He can't stand to have you think well of yourself. It's not a battle. I promise you, the masterful Creator of the universe does not need your good opinion to make Him sleep well at night. Right? He does not need your compliments. I think He likes them because it's appropriate, but I don't think He needs them. Instead, when He says you should be humble, it's because it's dangerous for you to be proud. Pride goes before nothing good, right? Pride is dangerous. That's why He tells us to get rid of it. And then fourth, true humility is not self-deprecation. It is interest in others more than self. This is the toughest one. That have you often seen false humility? When a person just like seems to thrive on putting themselves down in public. Well, you know, I'm just a this and I'm just a that. And and they on and on. At some point, you're like, okay, come on. This is not only not believable, it's not really healthy. This is no good. God doesn't want you to think you're dirt. He doesn't think you're dirt. He made you out of dirt and said you're in My image, right? But humility is the ability to stop thinking about yourself. And this is favorite all-time C.S. Lewis quote. This is the crown jewel now of a guy who loves everything Lewis ever said. Here's the crown jewel. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. How much time in the day do you spend thinking of yourself? That's the question of humility and pride. You can have an opinion of yourself that's kind of healthy. I'm a person made in God's image. Christ died for my sins. He made me a preacher of the gospel. He gave me a family. I can think about things that God has done for me and what that means about me, and I can have a healthy opinion of myself. But the unhealthy part is where I sit and think about that. Boy, I'm great. Boy, I'm great, right? And the more you think about that, the more dangerous it becomes. The key is for it to maybe be true. You don't have to think about it. When you're driving, this is the test. What are you thinking about when you're driving your car? Like those quiet moments when you don't have to think about anything and you're kind of tuned out? Are you sitting there thinking about what people think about you? Are you thinking about how to get something that you want? Are you thinking about what's in your best interest and what's coming your way when you're driving your car? Right. What are you thinking about in those in-between moments when you're not thinking about something else? If your mind, by default, runs back to think about me every time it takes a break, right? That's the default position. Whenever it's not pointed somewhere, okay, if I'm doing math, put my pen down, me. Right? If that's the default position, I'm always back to myself, that's pride. What's the alternative? Almost anything else, right? You could think about God. You could think about other people. You could think about other people more than yourself, right? It's very possible. That would be the answer to pride. Okay? So I love this quote. It's not about thinking, I'm just the worst person who's ever lived. You might be, I don't know, I haven't met all of you, but I'm guessing probably not. There's been some really bad people. But that's not the point. The point is, do I have to think about myself all the time? Even if I sit all the time and think about how bad I am, I'm still thinking about me. The world still revolves around me and how rotten I am and how many people I've hurt and I've on and on and on and on and on. It's still all about me, even negatively. So the question is not positive or negative thoughts. That's for the psychologist to deal with. It's about the topic. Is it all about you? But what if I set my affection on things above? If I think about things like God, right? That's how humility works. All-time favorite. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. That's the riddle. A few minutes left. Let's talk about developing humility. I told you at the very beginning, nobody gets it by accident, so how do you get there? This is actually my list. Lewis didn't give us any help here. He just said you're supposed to have it. Thanks. Now, how do I get it, right? So I made my own list of four things. Step one to me in developing humility is prayer. Remember that quote from Lewis about if you spend time with God, you're going to either start thinking of yourself less or think of yourself less highly, one or the other, right? You can't be around God very much and be proud. It doesn't work. So what is prayer and worship? If I just over and over again keep talking and focusing on God in prayer, if I look to God in worship and I say things about God, not because he needs me to say it, but because it's true. Okay? When I say those things over and over again, it puts me in the appropriate place by nature. Worship is the opposite of pride because it's not thinking about me. It's thinking about him. There's different kinds of hymns, and they're all, you know, different kinds of hymns for different situations. Some of them are personal devotion songs. If you read old Fanny Crosby hymns, they're all very personal, like about her emotions and her feeling towards God. And those are great songs. Nothing wrong with them. But the hymns I love the most are the ones that never even mention me, where you can go the whole song and it was only ever saying anything about God. That's perfect, right? That's completely putting my attention up there. The others have devotional purpose, right? They help me to work things out in my own head. But the songs that just say, pavilioned in splendor and guarded with praise, you know, all that, you know, that's where you're pointed the right direction, prayer and worship. Number two, service. And I typed this one out and then stopped and came back and added, without reward. Doing things for others that doesn't get you anything is an interesting practice to develop. An even better practice is service for others the others never know about. You want a discipline that's humiliating and humbling? Do things for people that they'll never know it's you. You want to go a step further? Do it for someone who doesn't like you and that you don't like. It will force you through gritted teeth towards humility because you're thinking about somebody else and you're not going to get anything out of it. And in fact, at the end of the day, they're still not going to like you. that kind of action, that selfless service. What is Jesus doing at the cross? Service for somebody else who doesn't understand what he's doing and is never going to give him credit for it and is shouting, crucify him as he does it. Selfless. Right? Number three might be controversial. I don't know. Depends how you feel about it. Fasting and abstinence. And what I mean by that is when your tummy is full and you're satisfied with all the pleasures of life, it's really easy to think about yourself and to think about what a fine life you've provided for yourself. Throughout the centuries, even before Christianity in the Old Testament and throughout the centuries of Christian history, Christians have often used fasting as a way to say, oh, I really am dependent on God for everything. I really am. And I'm going to stop focusing on these things that make me happy to just think about him. It's not something we do a lot in American Christian life. It's not normal for us. But in the New Testament, I mean, it just assumed that, yeah, of course they fasted and prayed. For us, it would be very strange, you know. We're going to have a fast. Why would we do that? Well, one is to call attention to something else. Christians did it in times of despair. When Paul's in prison, they fast and pray. I'm not worried about eating. I'm worried about Paul. See, selfless. When Nineveh is about to be destroyed, they fasted and prayed. We're praying to God for forgiveness, and nothing else matters until we get it. Yeah. So it's a way of focus. It's easy to be proud when you're full, because things are pretty good for me. And then number four, honest introspection. The mirror is a dangerous place for any human person to look. But one of the steps to human... Now, this one, Lewis would disagree with this one, by the way, because he would say, that's thinking about yourself again. Quit doing that, right? And so you can spend too much time getting in your own head, right? Just thinking about myself, thinking about myself, thinking about myself. But being honest with yourself when you do think about yourself, because I imagine we'll all do it eventually, to be honest in those moments, I think, is a powerful tool to be able to say, these are my weaknesses. These are things that I'm bad at. These are things that I've failed at. Hope God forgives me. You know, that kind of honesty with yourself is powerful. So, last quote. If anyone would like to acquire humility, I can, I think, tell him the first step. The first step is to realize that one is proud. If you think you are not conceited, it means you are very conceited indeed. Yeah, you are. I'll tell you my last story for this one, and then I'll open it up to comments. One of my early preaching mentors told me this story. He was and is a man who thought highly of himself. He was a very capable preacher. And so sometimes he came across as proud, and maybe he was, you know, it's possible. He taught at a school of preaching back in, I don't know, a million years ago when he was a young preacher. And the director of the school of preaching called him in. Charles, you've got to work on this pride thing. You've got to be more humble like I am. The first part might have been true. The second part was a problem, right? So anytime I turn in a... when I go to speak somewhere as a guest speaker, they always ask for a biography. And I always write something like, you know, Ben Williams, he's a preacher, he did this, here's my degrees. And he is extraordinarily humble. And they always look at me, you want me to read that? And I said, no. either that or I put good looking. Those are the options. Just see if they're reading it or not, anyway. All right, any comments on pride and humility? One place, Debbie, I put that and they read it. I was at Broken Arrow, and I put down at the bottom, Ben Williams is a younger, better-looking Tim Piles, who's their preacher. And they got up and the guy just read it. They didn't. I don't know if he didn't proof it or anything. I thought, it was the first time he'd ever looked at it. And Ben is a better-looking, yeah, so showed me. Yeah. Like there are other sins you can kind of get caught or catch yourself in. But pride is so subtle. How often do you just say a prayer and say, well, I was really proud today. I thought of myself and only myself all day long. And I want to acknowledge that. When does anybody ever go to the front for that one? I mean, I've read some interesting things at the front at the end of an invitation. But no one ever comes up and says, I thought of myself all day yesterday. I'd like your forgiveness. It's just not one we confess often or admit to because it's subtle. As Lewis says, most of us would deny we ever had it. But boy, you do. Okay. All right, I'm done. Thanks for your attention.